Do you know how we lovingly poke fun at each other?
I know how we lovingly poke fun at each other, yes.
Like you call me a swamp Yankee because of the spinny wheel?
Yes. I call you Ginger Boy, too, because you are sun avoidant. You're a person who should be sun avoidant.
I want to make some loving fun at your expense.
Excellent. I love when that happens.
I love it how you say sometimes to our listeners, you say, thank you for tuning in. And I just have
this
image.
It's a podcast. I know. They still tune in, kind of.
I have this image of our listeners hunched over an analog radio, just tweaking the dial a little bit. And I extended the metaphor. I think we should do a call-in show where we ask our listeners to go to a nearby phone booth, stick in a dime, dial us up.
Right. Well, thanks for tuning in is so much sexier than thanks for clicking on our podcast.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We are on a mission to understand, to frame current events and culture using the lenses of philosophy and theology.
Getting ourselves and our listeners beyond the binaries of politics and economics, which seems to consume so much of the conversation taking place in the public square.
We steer a course between programmatic secularists and quasi-theocrats. The programmatic secularists want any religious talk out of the public square, taking the view that religion should be merely private. And to them we say, no, there are riches in theological reflection that are really helpful as we try to understand our common life together. To the quasi-theocrats, who are more than delighted to have religion in public conversations, as long as it's theirs, to them we say, no, in this amazing, beautiful plurality of the United States, it cannot be just one perspective.
Did you want me to add something?
I did not.
Okay.
I was just pausing.
Excellent. We have a spinny wheel.
Which
we start our show with each and every week. Spinny wheel has made up of a bicycle wheel with a sprinkler head attached to it and 16 topics around it. We land on one. It gives us an opportunity to kind of what I like to call a soft opening. Go ahead. Give us a spin. Let's see which value of what in God's name. Wow. Slow news. I think we were on slow news last time. Slow news is a value of ours here at What in God's Name. We don't break the news, we like to say. We break it down. Not just rapid firing facts and incidences and story after story after story, but rather taking the time to go deep. So, as we say, to stay curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. So that's the nature of slow news, right?
That is, Shayna, well said. Today we are revisiting the opioid disaster in light of current events and new data. The current event, there's a trial in West Virginia of three distributors. They are being sued by the county and the city of Huntington. I don't know what the name of the county is. So we'll begin by filling in that picture. Just what the story is there in that litigation, that story as reported in the Wall Street Journal. And then we want to lift up some different and deeper ways to tell the story of addiction and addiction deaths in our culture. How does that sound, Shayna?
That sounds awesome. Sounds like enough for four shows.
So let's get grounded in the particular story. I'm just going to read from and summarize.
Is that a word?
It's not.
Okay.
Read from and summarize this article from the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal reports the following. Lawyers for West Virginia County and City told a judge on Monday, so that's earlier this week, that the nation's three largest drug distributors should be held liable for helping spur a public health crisis by ignoring mounting evidence for years that prescription drugs were being diverted for illegal use. So the first thing to note is that the defendants in this trial are the distributors, Shana, not the producers. This isn't a trial or a litigation against the drug companies, but rather the distributors, the three largest drug distributors in the United States. And the plaintiffs are this county and this city.
And the state of West Virginia, yes?
No, it's not the state. It's just the county and city of Huntington. The lawyer for the city says, we intend to prove the simple truth that the distributor sold a mountain of opioid pills into our community, fueling a modern opioid epidemic. So this lawsuit is seeking money to help abate a public health crisis. So that's why the city and the county are suing. There are other trials in the United States that are happening along these lines. The Wall Street Journal reports, along with West Virginia, there's a trial in California and in New York State set to happen next month, which could spur, quoting from the Wall Street Journal, could help spur broader settlements to end the opioid litigation. And when I read that, Shana, it just reminded me of the tobacco, the tobacco lawsuits that eventually, because enough pressure was brought, they got settled.
Do you know why the city of Huntington and Cable, I think it's Cable, C-A-B-E-L-L, Cable County, do you know why they're being considered ground zero for this?
Because there were so much opioids in kind of released and distributed there. You want to say more about
that? Yeah, well, just for our listeners to be able to put this into some sort of perspective, and I'm reading from The Guardian here. Cable County, with a population of just 90,000, right, were flooded by nearly 100 million opioid pills over a decade. 90,000 people over the course of 10 years got flooded by 100 million opioid pills. I mean, I would like to get a visual, like somebody put 100 million pills together for me so I can see what that tidal wave actually looks like when it rolls out, you know, against 90,000 people. Because that figure to me is not only stunning, but I think highlights the just lack of any sort of morality. And I mean, in other words, there was no way that they could not have been aware of what they were doing. Not with those kinds of numbers.
Yeah. So we'll get there in a moment, because that fact leads us to lots of questions. I wanted to quote the lawyer for the drug distributors, who said, he described the lawsuit as a misplaced and contrived attack on the distributors, on the wholesalers. He said that his client, this distribution company, his client had always followed the law, and that it should not be blamed for drug diversion that happened after opioids left its possession. So that's the counter argument offered by the defendant's lawyer. And then I was going to quote some of those numbers, Shana, but you've done that for us. I mean, it's just astounding when you consider how many of these opioids were released, and how compared to the population, it's amazing.
Well, again, you know, again, according to The Guardian, we're looking at 500,000 deaths over the course of a little over two decades. So, you know, when we think about the number of deaths attributed to coronavirus and how stunning that number is by anybody's imagination, remember that that number also gets attached to this social catastrophe.
So one reason we're picking up this story for What in God's Name is that litigation that started this week. The second reason we're picking this up is that recently the CDC put forth new statistics about overdose deaths. And the headline in the New York Times was, "Overdose deaths have surged during the pandemic, CDC data shows." And then the subscript, "The latest numbers surpass even the yearly tolls during the height of the opioid epidemic and mark a reversal of progress against addiction in recent years." So basically, the CDC data is showing that opioid epidemic deaths, opioid disaster, I like using the word disaster rather than epidemic. The opioid disaster was exacerbated and deaths rose during pandemic time.
Which initially I have to say I thought of as being a little bit surprising because, you know, I was thinking, wow, everybody's locked up and indoors. Where the hell are these people, you know, getting their drugs from? But on the more I thought about it, the more I realized, sure, I mean, in isolation, people couldn't get to meetings. You know, just the pressure, the intensity of that isolation, the pressure and intensity of the economic strain that so many people were under. And, you know, I would have to say, as a largely secular country, to what do we bind ourselves in times of trouble? I mean, you know, the world's great religions all have annual practices that take place over the long haul, right? You know, in fact, we're nearing the end of Ramadan. You know, that is a practice that requires one to really, you know, dig in. I mean, not only are you not eating during the day, but you're not drinking during the day. And anyone who's ever done that will tell you that is not an easy haul. Christians have the season of Lent. Jews have, you know, the time of the new year, Yom Kippur, a time of fasting. Buddhists, of course, are the experts in, you know, doing without, living that sort of minimalist life to keep one present to the here and now and not be distracted by things of comfort. When you, in the absence of any of those practices, right, imagine, you know, long distance runners must also, right, people who run marathons also know something about, you know, hanging in there through the long haul. Anybody who's ever had to deal with a major illness such as cancer may have figured out that, yep, this is going to suck and you can get through this. But for people who haven't been through some and have no faith community and have no physical practice that has engendered that robust endurance, and apparently the people who don't have any of that are a large portion of our country. So it was really easy for them to slip back into some sort of addiction or take it up for the first time. The other thing that I think made the deaths go up so much during the pandemic is because people were using in isolation. So when you have, you know, believe it or not, heroin addicts are really good at administering Narcan to each other. So, you know, if you're with a group of people and you go down, somebody starts doing something, either they, you know, give you some Narcan or they call 911. But if you're home alone, you know, in your apartment and you overdose, nobody knows for 3 or 4 days. So sad that as a nation, you know, I think both the pandemic and the opioid disaster found some places of real vulnerability, right?
I'm going to add just one more number to the context that we're setting, and then I have a rejoinder to your comment, and then I might even have a question to follow up with. See if I can remember all of that.
Taking notes, Chris.
The number I want to add, just for context, again, this is the report of the CDC. More than 87,000 Americans died of drug overdoses over the 12-month period that ended in September 2020, eclipsing the toll from any year since the opioid epidemic began in the 1990s. So that's just the number attached to the fact that opioid deaths rose in pandemic time. 87,000 Americans over the 12-month period that ended in September. That's the number. The rejoinder to your comment, Shayna, and it's just a personal, this is personal. I cannot navigate the world we live in without my own spiritual practices. I would be totally, totally lost and overwhelmed.
Amen. There are just times when I've got to lay it down, you know, and interestingly, you know, it is a cornerstone of the 12-step recovery programs that you find God, period. And if your idea of God is the fellowship of recovering addicts, if your idea of God is the table in the center of the room or the coffee pot in the corner of it, matters little. But you better find something beyond yourself, because relying solely on you is, generally speaking, what got you in the room in the first place. So, you know, and it's a conversation I have in my congregation all the time, is because in Unitarian Universalist houses of faith, we are a big tent, people from many different faith traditions and no faith tradition. But for those without a faith tradition, to find something, be it an ethic, be it, you know, the Constitution of the United States of America, be it the community, you got to have something that you can put your faith in that is bigger than you. And it may be the historic arc of the universe. You know, I mean, however you want to define it is fine. But there are times when we face things like a pandemic, it's too big for us. And if you are trying to deal with a pandemic and isolation and economic, you know, and it all starts to cave in on you. Yeah. What do you do?
So What in God's Name is not a show about personal spiritual practices, even though we touch on them and it's important. There are plenty of other shows where you can go and develop your own personal, individual, spiritual life. Our show is intended to lift up more of the systemic, public questions and issues to which we can bring theological and philosophical reflection. And so in that light, I wanted to ask you, getting to my question, which I did remember, this story of the litigation in West Virginia. And I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Do you see it as an example of corporate malfeasance? In other words, is it to you a no-brainer that the town, the city of Huntington, and the county should prevail in this lawsuit seeking damages against the distributors?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, you know, I'm going to say yes, but I'm not alone. Joseph Rana Zissi? I don't know. I'm sure I'm...
He's a friend of yours, apparently.
He's a friend of mine, no. He's a former senior Drug Enforcement Administration official who was one of the earlier people to take action against the distributors, called the distributors criminals and said they lack a conscience. And I guess I'm in Joe's camp. Where are you at?
Here's where I am. Aren't they doing... Weren't the distributors doing what they were supposed to do from the perspective of maximizing profits?
Yes.
And so what I find interesting is not so much the litigation, but lifting up this logic of free markets and the profit motive and how that logic, because it does have a logic, how that works in our society, and where do we find, hello, what in God's name, other people, where do we find a countervailing logic that will push up against the logic of free markets and maximizing profits?
Yeah, I mean, and those markets exist in the world. You know, there are other economies that pay more attention to their citizens who, in fact, and, you know, really... Put on your crash helmets and your seatbelts here, folks. There are other economies in the world who put the the best interests of their citizens at the heart of the economy. So the economy is accountable to, you know, to the people through, you know, through the government holds them accountable. But the, but that economy is doesn't get to just, you know, laissez-faire, do whatever the hell it damn well please, and, you know, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. They exist. They just don't exist here.
In my preparation for today's show, I wrote the following down as I reflected on this. I mean, just using theological language to understand free market orthodoxy. If money and profits are your God, small g God, if free markets are your God, then everything else is instrumental to that end, including human beings. Including human beings. And I find that fascinating because there's got to be, like, a healthy society has to feel that tension. And I think it does come through. Like, this litigation is at a kind of a deeper level. It's about, is there another logic that we can base our economic life on? Is there a logic that holds accountable a corporation, not just to its profits, but to its connections to human beings?
Well, it brings us back to sort of another fundamental theological grounding stone, which is, what is the common narrative that has allowed this to proliferate? Because we've seen this, right, in ancient history, where, you know, people's understanding of the world was based on a story about, you know, this god who tore his mother in half, and, you know, half of her became the firmament and the other half, and, you know, oh my God. Human beings were completely expendable in that narrative. They were there to serve the gods, right? So there's one theory out there that that Genesis, the book of Genesis in the Bible, was a counter to that narrative, and it parallels that earlier narrative very closely in terms of, you know, how the world is formed. But in the Genesis narrative, of course, the world is formed, is birthed by a God who is, you know, speaking it into existence and endowing humanity with responsibility. You are so good and so of the divine image that I am going to endow you with stewardship, responsibility for, the word that is often translated as dominion, over all of this, right? So we've seen this, you know, play out, that the narrative sets the ground for what's going to follow. And I guess my question is, what is the narrative right now that has given rise to this? And when did human beings become expendable? When did it happen that, you know, it laissez-faire economics became the god, free markets became the god? When did we move there?
We're going to need to leave it there. And we're going to revisit this next show. So, tune in.
No, I just have to remember it for a week. Okay. Tune in next week.
I brief rejoinder, even though I've brought our show to a close. I love how you frame it as a story, because I think it's really about the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are and what is meaningful. So part of our job is to lift up a different story.
Absolutely. So stay curious, friends.
Go deep.
And shine light.
Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. If you would like to join our generous donors on Patreon, go to patreon.com/whatingodsname. If you become a Patreon donor, you will become qualified for a preview screening of my new film, George's Words. It's a film about a quilt project that churches in New Hampshire undertook in response to the murder of George Floyd. Our show is also brought to you by our fiscal sponsor, Filmmakers Collaborative. You can find us on Facebook at What in Gods. You can sign up for our newsletter and our show by going to our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana,
WHATINGODS.
See you next time.
See you next time.